It is the National Hour on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. We are live on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. This Hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee in a couple of minutes. Steve Valiquette, analyst with the New York Rangers on MSG. CEO of Clear Sight Analytics, will join us on his Tuesday segment. Got to start with Stuart Skinner. 3-0 win for the Edmonton Oilers last night over Vegas. A very convincing 3-0 win. Yeah. I don't know if it was more impressive, JB, of just the complete hockey game or just Skinner's performance, particularly in game fours, where Sammy...
Yeah, he's red hot.
Like, the numbers are off the charts here. He's 5-0, 1.32, and a save percentage of .953 in game fours.
Not quite Justin Williams, Mr. Game 7, but he's Mr. Game 4. I will say, I will like to pat myself on the back going into the playoffs. I said, if the Oilers can play deep enough into this thing to get Evander Kane his feet underneath them, to get Trent Frederick comfortable in the lineup, they're going to be tough to beat. And
complete game-changing for them.
They suddenly are tough. They're falling on the goalie. They're, you know, they're all over the opposing crease. They're going to get, if they win this round, looks good. They're going to get Ekholm back. It's really tough to sit here and not say
favorites.
That they look like cup favorites. It
was a statement game, not only just to Vegas. I think to anybody else that's watching.
It was
from the jump in that game, it was like, oh, they're just better. They're better.
You guys kind of gave me a little bit of flack for calling Washington, Carolina boring yesterday. So yeah, I did.
No way I did that.
You did. You did. You're like, oh, come
on. Yeah, yeah, we did.
Both like, oh, come on.
I must have been humoring someone because it's...
Anyways,
I'm with you.
I watched the third period of Carolina, Washington.
Yeah.
Hard
to compare.
I'm like, ugh. And then I like watched the first period. I was like, oh,
I was like
strapped in. I was like, oh my God, it's a different
Aiden
sport.
Hill's fighting people, Frederick and Hager going at it.
You got Adam Henrique doing like on the knees while other guys are fighting
through his legs.
You're going from the teacup to Space Mountain.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. That was an amazing first period.
That's as good as it gets. You know, why watch playoff hockey when you just snort cocaine and ride a helicopter out of a motorcycle?
Yeah, there you go. Look at Hag is a big
Frederick
guy.
Was like, we're fighting? Frederick
also took a couple of little sneaky Mighty Mouse punches from him before it opened up.
Yeah,
was that the first fight of the playoffs? Like the first gloves-off fight?
I know that there was no fights, I want to say the first round.
Trying to think.
Frederick, by the way, gets sorted out in that fight and does just fine.
Yep.
Hangs in there. But yeah, Hag's a big boy. That's...
I loved the Oilers last night. I thought they're so impressive. They're just getting depth goals. They're playing good defense. Like, they don't even have their best guy.
And it's
crazy.
Almost as if now you got still you got the bullets in the chamber that in McDavid and Draisaitl still that can have that explosive
game. Yeah, they're
going to
have a couple
games
every series where they're just better than everyone and they win. Like,
and
one
then,
or two.
Yeah, exactly.
And they haven't really had that yet. They've been good, don't get me wrong.
It hasn't been needed.
Yeah.
Every night.
Yeah.
Just the stress factor of not having to be those guys all the time and watching four or five guys around you score, what now, 5, 6, 7 points in the playoffs.
You know what's funny is the other team, and Jets fans, cover your ears. The other team that's finding it is Dallas Stars get Miro Heiskanen back. And all of a sudden, Robertson's back, and they're finding their footing. And Mikko Rantanen has suddenly become the guy that everyone thought he was in Colorado. Like, you can see these two
collision course.
Yeah. These two just absolute giants headed straight for each other. And listen, I am unapologetically rooting for the Winnipeg Jets.
Totally agree.
To win that series.
Totally
I'll be
agree.
Open about that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really tough to see anything but Dallas Edmonton headed straight for each other right now. So some big work ahead for Vegas and for Winnipeg.
Repeat conference final from last year.
Could be, yeah.
Yep.
Big work for Steve Valiquette to still explain to us Winnipeg, Connor Hellebuyck, Homer on the road. I don't think I've ever seen that before.
You know what it reminds me of is the Stanley Cup Final, Vancouver-Boston, where Vancouver would eke out a win at home, then they go to Boston and just get filled in.
Lose 8-0?
Yeah. And go home and eke out a win. I don't know that means you're the better team when that happens, but they're trying. They need Connor to be a bit better.
The numbers I put in the numbers here. Hellebuck in his last eight playoff road games, 0-8, 5-8-3, 8-27.
Criminy. Really?
Oh, yeah.
0-8?
0-8.
Jeez,
from our beloved Sportsnet stats, so got to trust them.
All right, as I just mentioned, someone way smarter than us who can explain all of this is joining us. Steve Alliquette, how are you, my friend?
Very good, buddy. I've got a lot of information in my small computer. I think that's the way that you put it once, Kipper.
Good. We're glad because we got to explain all of this. So let's start with the effort from Stuart Skinner last night. And it helps, I think, getting thrown back in. It wasn't a coach's decision other than the fact that Calvin Pickard was not available. And it was a wonderful opportunity to get back in there. I don't know if anybody expected a shutout, but maybe we should have based on his history of game fours. But give us your overall thoughts of Skinner last night and the ability to make believers out of a lot of people again.
So small picture, I thought it was an excellent performance. I thought that he didn't move a lot. And I thought that he was playing deeper in his crease than he was in the previous game. So that's the key when you don't move really well. You have to find a way to move less. And I'm actually an expert at that because I got 10 tapes from Sean Burke from my goalie coach, Benoit Allaire, once upon a time during the 04-05 lockout. And he said to me, in no uncertain terms, you don't move well enough to play in the NHL. You have to move shorter distances like Sean Burke does. Find out how he plays. Here's the VHS tape. Mm-hmm. And what I did, guys, was I took those tapes and I went to the West Farms Mall in Hartford. And it was when Apple just was in its infancy. I got a converter. I was able to get that VHS tape into Final Cut, learned how to edit. Yeah. And Borny, did I ever get ripped by my teammates? Oh, what are you doing, Valley? Going to the Genius Bar, learning how to do some more video?
And you're like, it's going to make me rich one day, you idiots.
They were all over me. So I copied where he was standing off the rush. I focused on where his depth was when he was taking shots from the outside, odd mans, etc. The one thing I learned from Benoit Allaire, too, was that if you can stop pucks playing deep with confidence in practice when players have time and space, you can do it and give yourself permission to do it in games. That's what I saw from Skinner last night. I thought that he played deeper, bigger, quieter. That's the way that he has to play. It really got me thinking, though, can the Edmonton Oilers do something that no team has done in the last 20 years? And that's win with a goalie with a save percentage at .880. Because that's what we're looking at. And I'll tell you what I did, fellas, today. I went back and looked at all the championship save percentages over the years. And I think some of these will surprise you because they're higher than you may remember them. All right. So I went back all the way back to Antti Niemi when he won with the Chicago Blackhawks. You know, he didn't win with an .880. He won with a .910. And Tim Thomas and John Quick in the next 2 years were .940 and .946 save percentages.
Jeez.
Those were the big, right? Like, that's when we used to say goaltending wins cups.
Right.
Those guys stole those two cups those 2 years. Crawford in the next year was a .932, and Quick was a .911. Crawford again with a .924. So these are big numbers. Going forward with Matt Murray, your number three right now, and he was a .923 and he was a .937. All right? Holpe was a .922. Binner was a .914. Vasilevsky was a .937 and a .927. Kemper is the only outlier that I was able to find.
Okay.
He's a .902. He was a .902. And you guys remember, he was shaky, in and out, didn't carry the load, had some blowout games. That was the one cup that I remember over this last, 15 years of modern hockey where I'm kind of like, I'm not so sure about that one. Aiden Hill was a .932 save percentage. So, you're looking at the big picture here, and I'm kind of saying to myself, can you win with .880 goaltending? And we haven't seen it.
So many things have changed, including attitudes toward goaltenders, and we waited forever for Carolina to go get a star goalie, and they didn't get one. I think the main reason is they don't think they need one and mm-hmm. they can win this way. So, you know, what's that old saying? You know, like 50 is the new 40 when people are getting old.
Yeah.
So is 880 the new 9?
Is That's it, a
you
bank.
Know, is it like, it's, can it's you win? Can you win at 890?
See, I don't see it. I don't see it because Edmonton is still giving up far too much off the rush. And I went a little bit deeper, okay? I went Scuba Steve for this one. goals scored at 5-on-5 so far this year in the playoffs. Off the rush account for 39% of all the goals scored at 5-on-5 so far in the postseason. Off the rush matters. I bring this up a lot over the 4 years we've been doing this together, guys. It's a predictor. You must have a goalie that can stop the puck off the rush, and you must be a team that knows how to cover off the rush, specifically odd man rush. So it's 39% of all the goals scored off the rush. Offensive zone play is 30% of all the goals scored at 5-on-5. Off the forecheck, it's 14% of all goals. Giveaways, takeaways, 12%. Off faceoffs, 4%. And that's off of 252 goals that we've seen so far in the postseason at 5-on-5. But 70% of all the goals are scored at 5-on-5. So to me, it matters when we're talking about 40% of the goals being scored are off the rush that you have an off-the-rush goalie. And some things give me a bit of pause here because I was looking at Joseph Woll. And, I started by looking at the 2-on-1 goal that Bennett scored the other night.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know how you guys feel, but I always wanted the defenseman that was back covering the 2-on-1 to absorb the 2-on-1, and I wanted the back checker to take the weak side man. And I wanted that because it gave me a clear, defined read on the play. Now, I went back and looked at all of Joseph Woll's off-the-rush play, and I was surprised, and not surprised in a good way. This is the one place he's weak in his game. He's got a rating of 40th out of 44 qualifying goalies on 2-on-1s over the last 2 years in
How
the regular
sample,
season.
How big is the sample,
Valley? Well, this was 46 2-on-1s faced, and he had a rating of 40th out of 44 goalies with a minimum of 40 2-on-1s faced.
Mm-hmm. So you watched a lot of these?
Yeah, and you know what I saw?
Yeah, what did you see?
Low blocker shots. A lot of low blocker shots. And I think there wasn't a trust there. And I, you know, when you look at the regular season, what is it? It's to build up trust. Now, McCabe is coming back, and you've got Tanev playing it.
He still chose to play the same guy that Tanev
yes.
had. Do you
yeah,
see the look Tanev kind of gave him after that one?
Yeah, because Tanev was pointing to him, right? He was pointing to him. And he wanted him to take him March 22nd. I don't know why my psycho brain remembers this, but it was against the Nashville Predators, and they gave up another one. Same two guys when they were on the ice. High glove on Woll at that point. But, you know, when I was looking through the video, I could see that this should have been something that everybody is clear on at this stage of the game. So off the rush, we should have clear, concise expectations for goalie and for players. And to me, there's still some indecision there, and there shouldn't be. There shouldn't be a conflict at all on what everybody's role is when you're defending an odd man rush. It's a great A-plus scoring opportunity in a game, and it was a swing moment in that game.
That's interesting. Valley, I know we're going to get to different goaltenders, Hellebuck included, but I did want to ask you generally during the playoffs, have you come across anything that shows that there's a higher percentage of goals through screens, through traffic? It feels to me, watching the games right now, that like the only way to get through these tight defensive structures, guys sifting pucks through and being on top of the net.
Oh, it's a pinball machine right now.
Exactly. It's going in off everything.
Yeah, so I did that because I heard our fearless leader, Sammy, talking about that on the show recently. And, you know, what I saw was that there's just a higher shooting percentage, Borny. They're not happening more. So there's a much higher shooting percentage this year on point shots. I thought, as you thought, as Sammy said last week, that it looks like everything's just coming from the point. Now, in offensive zone play, one thing I have noticed is that shooting percentages and opportunities are down coming out of the corners and trying to get from below the goal line to slot on short plays. Although we saw a goal in the Edmonton-Vegas game last night, haven't seen a lot of it in the bigger picture. But most of the goals that are being scored from screens, from broken plays, from point shots, it's just a higher shooting percentage. I think the shooting percentage on, again, broken plays and rebounds and screens was 38%, where it's typically in the 25-24% range in the past years. So it's going in more, and that's why we're seeing it, because we obviously always focus on the goals.
Big storyline, no question. Maybe one of the biggest is Connor Hellebuck coming off of a potential MVP season to what's wrong with Connor, particularly on the road. And, you know, when we're watching other goalies suffer these bounces, is there comfort for Connor to know that others, goalies, may be underperforming as well? And this just may be the year of not the goalie.
I have so much prepared for Jet Talk that I might just keep going for the next 30 minutes.
Jet Talk.
It's on. I mean, I'll tell you, it's a fascinating story. Hellebuck, I'm going to start from the top here and just stick with rush, but I'm going to get there. Hellebuck has an .842 save percentage off the rush. He's allowed 12 goals off the rush, more than anybody else. So as much as we've talked about goals going in from the point with him, he's been terrible off the rush. So that's a big piece there. Winnipeg chances for and against. Our model doesn't like anybody worse than they like the Winnipeg Jets right now and their chances of getting through Dallas.
Ooh.
It's like, yeah, expected goals at 5-on-5, 15th. Off the rush, they're 15th. So they're giving up a lot of chances and they're not scoring on their chances. Their goalies are giving up a lot of goals on their chances. The model really dislikes them. But one thing I looked at for you, Kipper, was the home and away discrepancy with Hellebuck. All right, regular season Hellebuck on the home end, this is where he dominated. His expected save percentage was .905 at home this year. Now, that's good because, remember, we remove all the noise, like all the dump-ins and all that. Yeah. We're just looking at scoring chances. So a .905 expected is a very high number. That means you're playing for a very good defensive team. He was a .930 actual at home, way above everybody else. Yeah. That's where he, you know, gets into that heart conversation and why he wins the Vezina. It's because of his strength at home. On the road, what a difference. On the road, .901 expected in the regular season, and he played at .902, which means he did his job. He played at the level that he should. Mm-hmm. But this is where it gets crazy. On the road in the postseason, he has the worst expected save percentage, which means his team is the worst at defending on the road. He's facing the hardest chances. .868.
So that seems really relevant to me, Valley.
Yeah, like they're just giving up a ton. And his save percentage, Borny, on the .868, what he should be is .868, as hard as that is, .759.
Oh.
So that's the worst in the league in the postseason. Right. So he's performing terribly on the road and his home numbers are actually OK. I mean, he's an .890, .892. So he's actually solid like he should be at home, but he's getting destroyed on the road. And part of it is his own performance isn't bailing out his team. Now, one thing that I take quite seriously is trying to qualify a money goalie. When I was in Hartford, I remember having this conversation with Jim Schoenfeld, and we were talking about a goalie's impact on momentum. Now, in this particular game, we were in Manchester. Jason LaBarbera, who is now the goalie coach for the Calgary Flames, he was my goalie partner. And I can't tell you guys how much I respected him as a person and as a goalie. Like, this guy, he played in games sometimes that I didn't want myself. Like, he was one of those guys. And then I remember getting on the bus saying to myself, you know, I should have wanted that game as much as Barbs did. He went out and won. You know, he was just one of those teammates. He taught me a lot. We're in Manchester one night. We lose 1-0. He has 42 or 43 saves. But the goal he gives up is from the half wall. And after the game, Jim Schoenfeld, our general manager, that was really good. He had a great culture that he set for us there in the American League at that time. I think we ended up getting 7 of our American League guys to play for the Rangers. He said, you're judged on the goals you allow, not the saves that you make. Now, even as LaBarbera's teammate, I'm saying to myself, I mean, we're not even in that thing if it's not for him. How am I going to, you know, blame him for the goal from the half wall? But the point is that if you want to play at the highest level, you're judged on the goals that you allow because they can either add life or sink the bench. And it's goalies can control momentum in games. So why do I say all that? I want to know who's stopping the puck when the game is on the line. Because we've seen a lot of games in this playoffs where a team storms back, they tie it up, and then the goalie deflates their own team after carrying that momentum. And I'm sitting here watching the game, and I'm saying, God, like the goalies just aren't really with the swings and momentum. So if we factor in a goalie's save percentage when they are score tied, up by a goal or down by a goal, I like to refer to that as the money goalie. Now, the money goalie stat of all stats that kills Hellebuck and the Jets right now is that he has an .822 save percentage when the score is tied, or they're up by a goal or down by a goal. So, you know, for a guy, again, that we're talking about for Vezina and maybe even for Hart. Mm-hmm. Good news for the Leafs, Joseph Woll is second in the money goalie stat. He has a .916 save percentage at score tied, up by a goal or down by a goal. Number one, Frederik Andersen Kipper. He has a .939 save percentage in the money moments. Now, Kipper,
yep.
I heard years ago from a goalie coach that Frederik Andersen was the weakest mental goalie coach that he ever worked with. Mentally, he was the weakest that he'd ever worked with. I've never been able to get that out of my head, right? It just sits there. And when I see moments that have been Frederik Andersen moments over the years, and at the same time, I wonder, will he be able to break through? Has he worked on himself enough mentally to have a breakthrough? Look, I'm rooting for him, but his career has been marred by these moments where you really question it.
Right, he's got him a game away from a conference final.
.935 save percentage in playoffs right now.
He's at the leaderboard of every one of our deep dives, every one of them. He's all over the page.
Can I ask you,
go ahead,
Valley, about Bobrovsky? Because early in the Toronto series, we've seen a couple of goals go in on him after what usually would have been a momentum saver, but maybe a little leaky early, but he's shut the door. If you're the Leafs, how do you beat him tomorrow night?
All right, so I got some interesting stuff on Bob. Before the series began, he, and we had talked about, has a weakness of up in the net, above the gloves. 7 of the 11 goals that were scored in the Tampa series were over his hands. Now, here's where it kind of gets interesting for me because of the way that Florida defends. When I worked at Quinnipiac, and this is many years ago, and 2012 was a specific year, we had a 2-on-1 drill in practice, and our goalies got smoked. And we talked about it in the locker room, and what I had said to the coach at the time was, how about tomorrow you let me speak to the defenseman, just the defenseman. We won't let the forwards know about this conversation. And I laid out an imaginary line through the slot, which I used to call the Royal Road. And I told the defenseman that if the puck passes across that line or the puck carrier carries it across, like the Bennett goal, then let's just say that that is your net. That's your net as a defenseman. And if it goes in your net, it's going to end up in your goalie's net. We're not just going to make it vague and say, defend the middle of the ice. I want you to defend that line. The puck never goes across that line. Do you guys understand? Well, they went out and they positioned and postured different. They had earlier flex out and then came in to protect that line. And the goalies didn't give up any goals on 2-on-1s. At that moment, everybody bought into protecting that line. Now, go fast forward to where we are in modern hockey. That line, it's still matters, guys. One goal every 3 times the puck crosses that line. Florida, they've only allowed a pass or a player to cross that imaginary line 9 times in the playoffs. That's best in the NHL.
Jeez.
Only 9 times.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm looking at, you know, the teams that are doing really well and the teams that aren't doing well. And oftentimes it does matter to me with goalie save percentage and how it reflects that line. So I'm watching Austin Matthews the other night, and he receives the pass that I put on the Twitter for before the show, and it's down seam. And when he receives that puck, you know, look, again, as a viewer, I'm saying to myself, he's got to make the most on that play because they're so hard to get against Florida. And I know that he has a 45% chance to score on this play if he one-touches it.
Right? He hangs on too long.
He hangs on to it, Borny, and like that's what we do with our company, right? We want to see this puck on and off the stick in less than half of a second. right? We've talked a little bit about Quiet Eye this year. Well, that's the importance because you see where Bobrovsky is. You can see the slot line. The puck comes down that seam. Auston Matthews has a 45% chance to score this goal if it's a one-touch. And it's funny enough, but last night, two nights ago, Nino Niederreiter had the exact same seam. If you remember,
and he hit it.
On first touch, it was like bang, bang. And it's in the back of the net. And it doesn't give the goalie any opportunity to close that space. By the time Matthews got that off his stick, Borny, he was at 3/4 of a second.
Yeah.
And it must be off the stick in less than half a second. On your computer, each frame is 33.1 frames per second, so you can count them. And that's oftentimes what we do with our company. We were trying to just qualify time and space.
But Bob came across standing up, too, which was impressive.
Exactly.
Eh? Like, yes. gave him too much time there. So the one question I have for you, because I see this all the time when I'm seeing goalie analysis. As a player, I often shoot where, you know, when I was trying to score goals, I shot what was available. If you're in tight, you're trying to put it over the goalie. If you're backdoor, you're trying to hit it short side. Like you have, they're so rare. I see people go, oh, that guy's weak here. Oh, he's got a bad glove or whatever. There's like two chances every 20 games where you get to think and pick a spot. You know, you're mostly just shooting a spot. Can you be a successful NHL goalie if you have a spot? Because I see a lot of coverage that's like, oh, they're getting him high glove. And it's like, he's in the NHL. You know, right. Like he's pretty good there.
Look, I agree with you. This is a long conversation, but I'm going to try and make it short.
Okay.
Right? Okay. So what you do is you don't just take the big context of that illustration and say that's where he's been scored on. I want to see the scoring chances that he's been scored on from that location. So that's exactly. Was it a tip? Was it a rebound? Now, if we look at just shots, because start the easy way and just look at straight on shots, I would look at odd mans and shots from the slot and shots from just outside of slot. Joseph Woll, for instance, in my opinion, he uses a paddle length that's just a little bit too long, so he has a low blocker spot, right? So if I'm an open shooter and I'm on Joseph Woll, I'm actually targeting low blocker, and I'm just going to shoot my shot there. But if we talk about the Bobrovsky conversation and we're talking about east to west and we're talking about elevating the puck, I did prepare something for that, and I think this is really important. So we have seen 130 those low east to west, like the Auston Matthews graphic we just saw.
Yeah.
We've seen 130 of those scoring chances so far in the playoffs this year. We've seen 52 goals, all right? Only seven of them, Borny, have been on the ice. Only seven.
Really?
Right? So, yeah. So what does that tell you? You have to know how to elevate the puck on first touch. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about all-encompassing things. Do you know where else Matthews makes a mistake on that play? He also looked backdoor to Knies. Because Knies was there. Mm-hmm. So he received it. He dropped his jaw. He delayed to look up as he corralled the puck. So he's already in trouble. And if you look at the replay again, he's looking at Knies to try and throw Bobrovsky off as Bobrovsky comes across and gains depth on his feet. So all of that time that was accumulated by Bobrovsky gave him the advantage to score. But my point is that when I'm looking at all of the goals on low passes like that one, they are all in the upper part of the net, only seven on the ice. So get it up, learn how to get it up on first touch, and don't think about trying to make a better play. That's not the moment in the game that you're trying to be perfect by making a backdoor slam dunk for Knies. That's not the play. It is one touch up elevation. So if you want to know how to score in the NHL, every one of those passes east-west is one time.
In the past, he was never that guy, okay? I mean, he's always been shoot first. He's not your typical playmaking centerman. This guy was a pure shooter. And I mean, has he lost a little confidence? The fast twitch that he had doesn't appear there right now.
Well, you know, listen, whether it's, and I know it's been debated by you guys and rightfully so, like, is he hurt? Is something going on? But as I'm watching the game and I'm seeing him drill a one-timer that he misses the net on, but it's still a bomb. I know the one you're talking about.
He pounded it through the end wall. Yeah.
I'm like, hey man, like this guy's wrist is fine. If he can pound it like that.
Yeah.
Now part of it is he's not getting the chances. This, I was going to use this on the show last week and it's a good thing I hung on to my notes, but check this out. So the east to west that he faced when he scored the 69 goals, or 15, what was it, 69?
69.
So 69 goals that he scored, not this season, last season. He had 62 east to west passes where he scored 20 goals. Again, back to that same graphic. And then this season, he only had 29 east to west chances where he scored only 7 goals. You know, how do you go from 62 to 29? And then in the playoffs, that was his first east to west chance, the one that we just talked about. That was his first one. That's his first one.
Yeah.
He's not getting his chances. And sometimes, as you know, you can go through that with a player and say, hey, this is on you. You're not a target. You're not getting open. But boy, oh boy, like that was off a forecheck too, that chance, which to me, again, to me, watching from Connecticut, I'm like, that's a goal, guys. This is the series.
You know what, Valley? I'm looking at some big names with 3 goals or less in the playoffs, and I think McDavid, Eichel, Matthews, of course. Like when you look at your analytics in general, is there a huge, like, there's the game's changed from regular season to playoffs? We know the intensity's up, the attention to detail, like. Does it look on paper as big of a swing from regular season to playoffs as I think it might?
No, it does. Like, for instance, I know about Jack Eichel, and his focus is like defense first. If Jack gets a lot of his cookies during the regular season on the softer nights, he'll end up behind the other team's net, and he'll be looking for more offense because he knows he can get away with it on a night in Buffalo. But he does come up to the challenge of like shutting down Draisaitl and Connor. And I don't think he's even thinking offense right now. Like, he's not stretching himself out to take chances. Mm-hmm. Connor's interesting because what I noticed with Connor is he's like leading his team with shots from the outside. He's taking a lot of fluff and he's really focused on being a passer. So on his 2-on-1 game winner with Draisaitl, you know, Aiden Hill should know on that one, this is a pass, like 10 times out of 10 right now with this guy. Like, that's just what he's doing. That's the way he's playing. This is what he's looking for. He's not really that threatening. It's almost like that phase where Sidney Crosby went through, where I know that when we were pre-scouting him, because we had a couple of playoff rounds with him, it was always let him shoot if he's on a 2-on-1 or a 3-on-2. Mm-hmm. We love him as a shooter until he improved that piece of his game. But you know that you can defend against them a certain way, and it's that way. But, yeah, I'm seeing it like in expected goals. You can see just the raw numbers of guys just aren't getting chances that, and oftentimes you're looking at the big guys and you're saying, Austin's there. Like, he's not getting – it's not that he's unlucky, because there are ways that you can look at it and say, all right, let me see the video. All right, he's got like 4 posts on open nets. These are going to turn for him. Yeah. This is a number that's going to turn for him. I don't see the light at the end of the tunnel, though.
Wow, great stuff, buddy.
Belly, how many hours do you think we can do a show just the 3 of us?
Like, I think that we're working towards next year, which is Sammy and Friends, and he's going to run the show, and we're just going to all come in, and he's going to pay us a sum. In fact, I got a bone to pick with you, Sammy.
Oh, God. Okay. Oh, is it about last week? Yeah. Here we go. I knew this is coming. Yeah. I knew this is coming.
What'd you do?
What do you think I'm going to say?
Why did you make me move for Hank? Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
I knew it. I knew it. I thought go, for sure. Listen.
Okay, for the record, I told him the same thing.
When it comes to this show, Valley is not the backup.
You think I don't know what this
backup
is like, Sammy? 230 games in the NHL with this thing on, all right? The backup,
Sammy,
that guy forever.
You know what? He got starstruck.
Listen.
Okay.
Yeah. Twinkle in Hank's eye.
You'd get away with that, Sammy.
You'd get away with that if I wasn't taking a walk on the beach the next day listening to it.
It's not often that the producer's nightmares get brought up on national television, but I got the squirms, boys. I'm feeling
just be honest. Just be honest with me, man. Hank had to start.
Listen,
what do you think?
You didn't even ask why. If you had asked, I would have told you.
Why would I ask why?
Don't ask, don't tell.
There's no job too big. There's no job too small for me.
Listen, I'll eat the crap on that one. We had to get Handsome Hank on. That's the only day he could do. Sorry, brother.
That's it. Yeah.
You're better anyway.
And Sammy's wife pressured him.
Yeah. Thanks, Sammy.
Love you, bud.
Now I'll ask going forward. Thanks, Sammy. Yeah.
Thanks, Valley. Great job.
All right, better looking Steve Alicat.
Let's go Leafs. Come on, Leafs. Let's go. All right, boys.
Thanks, pal.
Ciao.
Oh, great stuff.
Honestly, we could do hours. Hours of just asking Valley questions.
Oh, man,
you okay?
I'm fine. Totally.
Yeah, okay.
But I just, there's certain truths and half lies you have to tell when you're a producer. It's much like being, I don't know, in a relationship. And that was one I didn't know. I was hoping it would never come up.
Don't ever give relationship advice.
In fairness, we knew we could only get Hank one day at the one time.
God, he's so handsome. How can you say no?
I can't argue.
Game time?
Game time.
It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play responsibly. What was it that you wanted, Barney? The total of goals?
Leafs goal or goals under. What's their over-under for individual goals in a game?
I
would like to bet under 2.5. Consider under 1.5.
I'm trying to figure out that right now on the fly here. But the game for the total itself. They are expecting. It's 6. The number is 6 for tomorrow. And the under is a favorite at -120. The over is a little bit of an underdog at +100.
I don't mind that you get your push at 6 goals.
If you want,
I don't think it's going to be 7.
I mean, if you wanted to tease, if you really think it's going to be a slog,
tease the line down.
They have 2.5 goals. The under on that one is
for Leafs.
No, like
for
the game. So I guess it would be
3-2 final.
Yeah, so I think that's a safe bet.
So if you think it's going to be a 3-2 final,
and you push,
the under is 5.5 goals. So that would be. There you go. There's your number there. And that would be -105 for tomorrow night. So
-105, they think it'll be under.
4.5 goals under is +265. So that's where you start getting a little bit of value.
I would consider +265 is a good number. I would consider that. I could see a 3-1 score.
Tonight, the Jets are in Dallas. Game 4, crucial one for them. They are underdogs against the Dallas Stars. They are +130 on the money line.
I think Dallas is going to go 7D.
Like that move.
11-7.
I really like that move.
Just going to work him back in.
And I'm looking at the numbers here. Mikko Rantanen is still plus money to score a goal. I mean, he's +140. You kind of got to press here, don't you?
You know what the DeBoer clip is on going 11-7? He goes, yeah, that just means I get to play Rantanen more.
I love it.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Yeah. So, give me a Mikko Rantanen anytime goal tonight. Why would I bet against that at this point of the playoffs? I also don't mind a Kyle Connor anytime goal at +190. And that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. But for 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly.
So I'm all over Isle's Twitter. You know, just like I follow a bunch of people from there.
Oh, I thought you said something that got you on.
No. Like I just follow a bunch of people.
Yeah.
And right now, spotted sources close to the situation tell me Isle's GM and longtime NHL guy Lou Lamoriello spotted at the Buffalo Niagara International Airport. There's a picture of him in Buffalo. It's like, you know, I don't know. Could he help the Sabres? No. Not happening.
Here's the thing. Maybe he loves chicken wings.
That's a layover spot, too.
I've had Lenovo wings. They're fantastic. So.
Buy in for some wings.
Why not?
Kipper says no.
All
right, don't ignore my Isles Twitter.
Are you done?
No, I'm done. Did I not say the end?
Did he say the end?
No. I did.
I don't pay attention.
Okay, well, that was Game Time. That was Game Time presented by Bet365. I did.
Okay.
Bet365, Game Time.
All right, we're good.
We're good.
We'll take a quick break. When we return, we'll get into a little bit more of that. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you why Lou's not going to Buffalo.
Oh, because he's going somewhere else?
We'll talk about the LA Kings. Mm-hmm. Ken Holland, our Elliot Friedman, reporting on Monday that indications are LA closing in.
You have to be 70 to get a GM.
I'll tell you the reason why Holland's going to go to LA and who he turned down after the break.
Whoa, sexy tease, buddy.
Let's go. And listening to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the program. As a reminder, this hour, a Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee.
Sammy, right. how's Team Canada doing at the World Championships?
3-0. They've had big wins over France, over Hungary, over Slovenia.
Nate McKinnon against Hungary. How'd that go? How'd he do?
I saw Sid punch. Oh, they beat Latvia. I saw Sid punch a Latvian guy's helmet off. So he's
the round robin over because nobody really pays attention to that.
They play a lot of round robin games. I think their last one's against Sweden May 20th, I want to say. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be the end of it, and then everybody will get into it. But, yeah.
I saw Sid spin off some guy and just buried on some team in practice jerseys. So looks fun.
Anyway. So I got my eyes on it.
All right.
I'll get more into it once they get to the medal rounds and stuff, but I've got my eyes on it.
Okay. Just before the break, we mentioned Ken Holland, now expected to be named general manager of the LA Kings or some position. I'm not convinced that it's a long-term thing for him as a general manager. My sense is that they're going to bring him on board and they're, might be another hire coming. Mm. And I don't know if it would be someone kind of new, fresh, someone that Ken can groom. But there seems to be obviously the different direction that they're going, but they're starting with Ken Holland.
All these organizations now with this whole president thing, they're all, we're going to bring in Kent Hughes but Gorton behind him, and we're going to bring in Alvin but Rutherford's behind him. And, you know, everyone wants to have this, like, layers of...
I think... If I'm not mistaken, Ken might be about 70 years of age. So, I mean, he's not really old, but he's no spring chicken either. So I get a sense that it's not going to be the day-to-day situation that it would normally come with being a general manager, that there's going to be...
What a dream.
There's going to be someone else.
What a dream when you're 70. Los Angeles. I'll live in Manhattan Beach, and I won't be the day-to-day guy. Sounds good.
A big draw for Ken also was West Coast. He's got a home in British Columbia.
He's a Predator Ridge guy, isn't he? He's around Vernon area.
And I think being on that West Coast in L.A. is a better situation for him to get home. Much more than the Islanders, which I'm told they offered to Ken Holland.
Really?
And he was more interested on going to the West Coast, and L.A. was a better fit for him.
Two teams my dad played for, but I will say.
Than taking the job for...
Foolish decision.
So he...
But this
he essentially turned down the job of the New York Islanders is what I'm saying.
And to me, he made a lifestyle choice, right? He wants to be closer to home. It's a nice place to live. It's all, you know, those are, you're not typically getting, and I'm not saying this in a way that I hope not to disparage Ken, but that's not like, you always talk about guys coming to play for the Maple Leafs and you're like, because they want to be here. They want to come home. They want to play in front of their friends. They want to... You know, it's not necessarily the most motivated people to win a cup. You're just getting people who want to be here. I hope there is someone else that they're working with them and can guide because he knows his stuff, obviously. Look at the Oilers right now.
No.
Yeah, it's funny, though. You want to go to the team that just, like, every year loses to the team that you used to run?
I'm not putting words in his mouth, but I don't know if it's 100%. It's a lifestyle thing, right? Go take a chance at the Kings.
It has to be at that age.
Yeah.
It's got to be like a complete package kind of thing. It works, and it also works away from the
He's not taking this job in Columbus. He's not.
No.
You know, he's not taking it in Winnipeg. No offense. Anyway.
The other name that you mentioned, Lou Lamoriello, not going anywhere.
Nowhere.
Staying with the Islanders.
Staying with the Islanders.
In some sort of capacity, which
I hope
completely
he
goes.
Really?
I said on this show that he didn't strike me as a guy that would want to kind of
special advisor
hang around, but I hear he's hanging around.
I think you get to a point where your choices are hang around or don't be around, and hanging around is an upgrade on the don't be around.
I've also talked to enough people where it's like they're not really sure. Like, how much he's going to hang around. Some tell me, like, minimal. And then others say, he'll be behind the scenes.
I always think, and I know this is, like, telling about my own personality, but, like, go catch Marlin. Go play golf. Go see Rome. Go do... Don't you want to do stuff?
That's not Lou. Okay?
Go watch hockey in Switzerland.
What do you like?
Go if you love hockey so much. They play hockey in beautiful places like Budapest and Germany, and they play hockey all over the world. Go watch it there.
I guess this is what he likes to do. He likes to run hockey teams.
But he loves. It's all he knows.
Right.
It's all that's been around in his life, and it would be really hard. And I don't know if he felt like he was not interested in now doing the same role for another organization. I think the Islanders ownership group offered him this ambassador, whatever you want to call it, special advisor, whatever you want to call it. And he took that rather than uprooting again to a new organization.
It's a great place to live. And he is, you know, I think he's very well settled. I know he's respected and liked, and he likes the area.
So if Ken
he's
Holland
lived in the area with the Devils for years,
if Ken Holland kind of, if he turned it down, then would another experienced guy come in with Lou, or would it make more sense for the ownership group with Lou's help to go find the next young general
I'm
manager?
Team Matthew Darche.
That's the name that I keep hearing.
I would like to see Matthew Darche get the job. To me, it's like he has seen what the Lightning have done for the past decade. They have been ruthless in their decision-making, whether it's Gord or Palat or, go through the list. Stamkos, obviously.
So if you go with Matthew, who's got no experience at the general manager level, and you've got Lou somewhere hanging around.
Just over his shoulder. I wouldn't do that.
Nope.
It would kind of feel to Islander fans that maybe Lou's still the guy. That's the danger. And again, I don't know. Again, some people are telling me, no, Lou's not going to be around that much. He's not going to be pushing buttons like he did in the previous
season. But you're right. Like this guy, if he wants to be there and he lives in the area and that's what he likes doing, he'll probably be around some. I'm torn on it because I have a ton of respect for Lou, the man he is, the job he's done over his career and the way he runs organizations. I was ready for a fresh start, but
yeah. It's not a fresh. You're beating around the bush. Like you said, if he's there,
he's the guy.
It is not a fresh start.
Yeah.
He's lurking. He's just always going to be around. Like you think, like you said.
Lurkerella?
Think you're going to be making a big decision without, like, Lou? If he's there.
Yeah, if he disagrees with the decision you want to make, everyone's going to be like, what do we do? Does he have say in this? Is he the guy?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how it's going to work. And for the next few years, if Lou takes on this role for a couple of seasons.
I guess if he stopped being a GM now, it'd be like when Brooks gets out in Shawshank Redemption.
And then there's
like, I don't know what to do.
There's
with
a head coach too, right?
To the world.
Let's not forget, there's still a head coach, Hall of Famer,
Patty Waugh.
He's
the dude. He's staying.
Regarded as one of the best in history, so there's a lot of still strong opinions in that organization, not too far removed.
Mm-hmm. Listen, say what you will about Lou, but it was his last year as general manager. He gave them a parting gift with that Brock Nelson trade. Yeah. First-round pick, Cal Ritchie, who's starring for the Oshawa Generals in the OHL final right now. He is a stud.
I would have rather they had multiple parting gifts.
Sure.
Peugeot and
Palmieri.
But that was first pick overall coming.
Yeah.
What's that? From the Cal Ritchie thing?
No. They won the lottery.
And that.
Yeah.
Like, they should be in decent shape.
Yeah.
In two years.
They can get aggressive.
They got a good goalie.
Flip some
back
of these
to the playoffs.
Old guys. I think they're going to be right around that 89-93 team.
When you got one of the best goalies in the league, you got a chance.
And Sorokin rules.
Sorokin can be one of the best guys in the league when he's
certainly
out,
can. So. Tonight.
Heiskanen back.
Miro Heiskanen.
What do you think of
Pete DeBoer
11-7?
Love it.
I think it's a good way if Rantanen, Heiskanen's not ready to do 25 minutes like he usually does, then you don't want to disrupt your pairs too much.
Mm-hmm. I think it was January he was out with a collision.
I'm going to say a little later, maybe February?
I don't know.
Maybe January. I felt like it was
3.5 months.
It's been a long time, regardless.
3.5 months.
And as much as
with a collision with Mark Stone, I think, in January, maybe late January. But, man, it's a long time to be out, to come back in and hit that high note of a series.
But, if they're leaving the other 6D and they're taking out Alex Petrovic, I know he kicked one in. He's a great story, but I don't think it's a massive loss to get Miro Heiskanen in.
The last game he played 1950 on January 28, 2025.
There you go. Okay. No reason at all to change the channel at all.
Hockey,
Sportsnet brings it all to you.
one game, the viewer, start to get a little worried about there being less hockey.
Jets in Dallas, 8 p.m. Eastern, Sportsnet and CBC. Our thanks to Steve Valiquette and Gord Stellick in our Leaf Hour edition. Enjoy the game tonight, and we're back tomorrow on The Real Kipper and Bourne Show.